Welcome back to Beyond the Informed. I'm Justin Asiri, and each week, normally I interview military veterans about their civilian career to talk about, for an active duty and recently transitioned audience, what they do, how they got there, and advice for other veterans seeking that same career path. Today's episode number 153, and today we are going to be talking about a book, so I am obliged to play this music really quickly.
Butterfly in the sky.
That's right. We are going to be doing a book review of a book that I think will help a lot of veterans. For those of you listening on audio, this episode is available by video. Experimenting with this a little bit, let me know what you think, if this is more helpful or if you just prefer the audio format. And one quick plug before we dive in, if you haven't had a chance to leave us a positive review on iTunes, I would greatly appreciate it. It would mean the world to me. Helps get the word out about the show. So today we're going to be talking about this book right here. It is called The Dip by Seth Godin, a little book that teaches you when to quit and when to stick. I really love this book. I actually just finished reading it. It took me probably 80 minutes to finish it. It's a very short, very efficient, brief, and compelling book, but one that I think would help most veterans. I know I found it very helpful as well. I'll talk about the premise of the book. I'll share some of the things that stuck out with me, but a couple of things that made me think of reviewing this book for the show is a lot of it is about when to quit, when to stick with it. And I think that most of the veterans I've interviewed on the show talk about a lot of resistance they face, a lot of adversity, a lot of obstacles they face in going from the known of the military to the unknown of what lays beyond for their civilian career. And a lot of what has made the difference for the people I've interviewed has been persistence, smart persistence, and finding their way. I think of Bill Angeloni. I don't even know what episode number that is, but Bill Angeloni talks about lots of different careers that he's had. I think about Todd Connor from the Bunker Labs, and he talks about a failed career in politics and consulting and all these different things he's done before he landed on his current success with Bunker Labs. And so there's something about resilience. There's something about being able to handle these ups and downs. It was the premise of why I recorded the last book review, which is Failing Forward. If you haven't listened to that, John C. Maxwell's book review, really, really powerful message. So I thought I'd share with you just a couple of things that stood out to me. My intention for this is not to replace the book. My intention is to, for those of you listening right now, to give you something tangible, something that can help you today and whatever you're doing, but also to give you some tips that might help you or might motivate you to read the book and take the 80 minutes that it takes to read it. I don't get any sort of commission on this. I stopped putting Amazon commission-based links on the site. It's like 5 cents if someone clicks. It's just not really worth the time. So I'm just going to kind of share some of the things that stood out to me, and hopefully this lands for you. So one of the first things he says is, Vince Lombardi says, "Quitters never win, and winners never quit." Bad advice. Winners quit all the time. They just quit the right stuff at the right time. And the premise of this book is about figuring out when to quit. And a lot of the stuff that we'll talk about is actually quitting before you even start, really figuring out what matters, committing to those things that matter, and going all in on them, and not trying and not starting with the things that aren't worth it, that aren't worth that cost. So, you know, part of the premise for this book, you know, the introduction is, if you learn about the systems that have been put in place that encourage quitting, you'll be more likely to beat them. And once you understand the common sinkhole that trips up so many people, I call it the dip, you'll be one step closer to getting through it. And so a lot of this is, actually, let me just read on here because I think this is so compelling. Extraordinary benefits accrue to the tiny minority of people who are able to push just a little bit longer than most. Extraordinary benefits also accrue to the tiny majority with the guts to quit early and refocus their efforts on something new. Quit the wrong stuff, stick with the right stuff, have the guts to do one or the other. And one of the things I loved about this book is there's no chapters. It's just little short vignettes, and it's very readable. It allows you to just fly through. It's very efficient. He talks about in the end about how difficult it is to write a short book, how it's often easier to write a big book, but to really be concise and direct and to the point takes a skill. And I think Seth Godin, he's a very popular author, I think he really masters that, of being exceptionally tactical, surgical in his advice, and very, very brief, which is appreciated. I finished it over a glass of wine and a cigar. So a lot of what he talks about in the book is this thought of being the best in the world. And if you haven't listened to my book recap on deep work, I would really recommend, that's a good chaser for this book review. Deep Work by Cal Newport is about, the premise is that in the way that we're headed as an economy and a society, people will be rewarded for things that they're exceptionally good at, and things that are commodities won't matter. So if you're really good at email, if you're really good at easy tasks, you won't be rewarded in the marketplace. You are rewarded for one skill that you do better than anyone else. And so the premise of his book is how to cultivate a mindset, how to cultivate a skill of going very deep on really shutting out everything that doesn't matter and being extremely focused on the one or maybe two things that really matter. And that definitely is seconded in this book. He talks about being the best in the world. One of the things he says, he has lots of examples for this, graphs, things like that, but just as a summary, the rewards are heavily skewed, so much so that it's typical for the number one to get 10 times the benefit of number 10 and 100 times the benefit of 100. He gives illustrations like with music artists and how the best in the world, I mean, in terms of wealth, notoriety, fame, fortune, everything, compared to an average artist, I mean, it's thousands, hundreds of thousands, millions of times more than that average person. And so he really does a good job of driving home this thought of not being average, of really being the best. He talks about scarcity makes being at the top worth something. A great example he gave is, so if I'm looking for a freelance copy editor, I want the best copy editor in English who's available, who can find a way to work with me at a price I can afford. That's my best in the world. And I like that distinction. This is not about everyone listening to this podcast being the best financial advisor in the world. It's not about being the best consultant in the world. It's about in the world for you that matters being the best. He says, the mass market is dying. There is no longer one best song or one best kind of coffee. Now there are a million micro markets, but each micro market still has a best. And I found that encouraging, to think that as you think of what you're going to do in your career, we are going in the direction where there are so many niches accessible online through different communities. And you could be the best person who knows the most about, I can't even think off the top of my head of some crazy example, but it could be, you know, our society and economy is rewarding specialization in a way that's exciting, because you really could be the best at one particular niche. You've probably heard me reference Kevin Kelly's essay, 1,000 True Fans, and his premise is, if you can build something that 1,000 people love and just really, really couldn't do without, that's enough in this stage to build an empire on. That's really all you need. So as I talk about the best, don't confuse that with being Michael Jordan or nothing. Don't confuse that with being Oprah or nothing. There are lots of different niches in which you can be the best. You could be the best, you know, sandwich maker in your town. You could be the best local artist. You could be the best. It just kind of matters what the people around you define as in the world. You know, I'm not driving all across the world for the best cup of coffee. I'm looking for the best cup of coffee within a 2-mile radius. So that kind of makes this a little bit more addressable. One of the things he says, he talks a lot about how in our culture we're taught to not quit. which is a habit you need to break. He says, how often do you look for someone who is actually quite good at the things you don't need her to do? How often do you hope that your accountant is a safe driver and a decent golfer? And this kind of echoes this sentiment of really specializing in one thing and not worrying about being the best at everything. You've probably heard on other episodes, people have said, you know, you want to safeguard your weaknesses, but just blow out your strength. And I love that. I think that's great advice. And he says, you know, in a free market, we reward the exceptional. And then he says, you know, to go along with this point, strategic quitting is the secret of successful organizations. Reactive quitting and serial quitting are the bane of those that strive and fail to get what they want. And so, you know, that's a big theme of this book is having a strategy and not quitting that strategy, but being willing to quit tactics. If your strategy is to, you know, is to get a job that's very fulfilling, then it's less intimidating if you get rejected from your first job. It's less intimidating if you go for 30 job interviews and rejected from all of them. Maybe you change your tactic. Maybe you don't cast such a wide net. Maybe you go for a much more particular skill set, but you're not rejecting the strategy around fulfillment. You're rejecting the tactic that might not have worked. Maybe you've approached it incorrectly the first way, but you can iterate and improve on these tactics. He talks about basically two types of things. He calls one the dip, and that's where you start at something, you're feeling great. Let's just take an example of, like, let's say tennis. You're playing tennis, you're learning a lot, you're growing, you're getting positive feedback, your skill is increasing. But then you reach a point where that starts to diminish, where you put in a lot more effort, but the results go down. They're not actually, you're not having that high growth feeling anymore. And this dip he talks about is really the key, that you need to power through that dip where you're not getting positive reinforcement, where it's not easy anymore. An analogy he gives that I love is in exercising. And he's like, you know, in exercising, if let's say you're lifting weights, you know, you're the first couple reps, maybe the first 10 reps are just about getting tired, but all the growth comes from those last 5 reps where there's pain and you're tearing muscle, but you push through. And so it's not about that that short term. It's about pushing through those dips where there's pain, where it feels like you're not getting anywhere, but you, if you power through, you get past that dip, and that's where the exceptional growth comes from. And so many people, as he talks about a lot in this book, so many people quit in that dip. And that's what makes it worthwhile. There's some great quotes ahead, but it makes it worthwhile because that dip, when you're not getting that rush anymore of growth in skiing, in developing a skill, whatever it is, that's when everyone gives up. And if you persist, you can be the best. And to, you know, for the best, that's where all the juice is. That's where all the reward is. Let's see here. So another one. This one I loved, and I think of my interview with Steven Reinemann, the Marine turned CEO of Pepsi, and this is so true of his story, but let me just read this. Who wouldn't want to live like modern-day royalty? He's speaking previously about CEOs flying around on private jets and having this incredible lifestyle. Of course, if you look at the resume of a typical CEO, you'll see that he endured a 25-year dip before landing the job. For a quarter of a century, he needed to suck it up, keep his head down, and do what he was told. He needed to hit his numbers, work longer hours than everyone else, and kiss up to his boss of the moment, day in and day out, year after year. And so I love this thought. And, you know, I also think that as some of you are listening to this, those of you who are in active duty, it's worth looking at the dip of, you know, if you're in that 12 or 13 year point, maybe that is the dip for you. Maybe that is the point at which you do want to power through. You do want to be a commanding officer. You do want to be flag rank. You want to be a chief petty officer, whatever it is for you. You want to endure past that dip, but that's also the point at which a lot of people leave. And that's not an advocate to stay in the military or to get out. A lot of what we'll get into is figuring out, is the juice worth the squeeze? Is whatever you're going after worth enduring that dip? enduring the mundane. And I love this thought, you know, 25 years. I think that's so realistic. 25 years of a dip. But the person who has their sight set on that, who endures, not just endures, he talks about leaning into these dips, really making the most of them, not just suffering it out, but like realizing the process, realizing what this dip is, and really going for it. Let's see here. The other two things he talks about, there's the dip. There's what he calls the cul-de-sac. And he says that the biggest obstacle to success in life, as far as I can tell, is our inability to quit these curves, the cul-de-sac, soon enough. So the cul-de-sac is where it just is not going to go anywhere. No matter what you do, you're never going to be the best. This could be, you know, if you are opening up a coffee shop and trying to unseat Starbucks, you might reach the conclusion that you're in a cul-de-sac, that no matter what you do, you're never going to be the best. Me, if I'm trying to be a world-class basketball player, that's probably a cul-de-sac. That's definitely a cul-de-sac if you've ever seen me do any sort of sport. It's not going to happen. And so recognizing that there's not the opportunity for the exceptional outcome we're wanting. And so he talks about a lot of the book is trying to find the distinction between these two. And he says it's actually easy to distinguish between the dip that could lead to eventual world-class and the cul-de-sac, which is never going to go anywhere. He said the difficulty is actually having the courage to recognize that and get out of the cul-de-sac, to quit a job, to shut something down, to move on, to throw in the towel. Not because it's hard in the moment, not because you're reacting out of fear, but because you're recognizing this is not actually where I want to go. This maybe summarizes this. He says, a few people will choose to do the brave thing and end up the best in the world. Informed people will probably choose to do the mature thing and save their resources for a project they're truly passionate about. Both are fine choices. It's the last choice, the common choice, the choice to give it a shot and then quit that you must avoid if you want to succeed. And in that example, he was referring to being a snowboarder. And it's like, look, you can commit to it and go all in on snowboarding and be the best in the world, or you can say that it's not worth your resources. You're not willing to put in the time to do that, but you can use that time elsewhere. And a lot of what he says in this book is about, you know, figuring out where you want to maximize, and you really need to save up your energy for that. I'm actually going to skip to the end because I thought there was a really good summary that kind of gets at this. The lesson is simple. If you've got as much as you've got, use it. Use it to become the best in the world, to change the game, to set the agenda for everyone else. You can only do that by marshaling all of your resources to get through the biggest possible dip. In order to get through that dip, you'll need to quit everything else. And he talks about in this book beautifully about how these dips are great barriers to entry. He gives the example of Microsoft, which was not an overnight success. I think he says that Microsoft Word failed 3 times before it was successful. Excel failed twice before it was successful. And, you know, they continued, but they built up a massive dip. You think of the adoption of Microsoft Word and Microsoft products, to unseat them, you have to go through one of the biggest dips imaginable. You have to go through so much to be able to get after them. And the truth is, most companies will fail. They'll run out of money, they'll run out of energy or desire before they get there. And so there are advantages to dips. And I think what's exciting about that is when you are looking as a veteran at your future career, whatever it is you want to do, if you really want it, if you know this is what you want, and you count that cost up front, you know how hard it's going to be to get there, that's a great competitive advantage. You as a veteran have so much more determination and discipline and stick-to-itiveness than most of the population. And so I'm just so convinced if you set your sight on that, and don't delude yourself, maybe it will take that 25 years to get there, but if you set your sights on that and you're willing to go through that dip, through that wasteland that no one else is willing to go through, just imagine the advantages, the riches that await you on the other side. And, you know, let me just look here. And I thought there was another great, great quote with that. So he talks about making sure that it's – oh, here we go. So making sure that the juice is worth the squeeze. So short-term pain, he says, has more impact on most people than long-term benefits do, which is why it's important for you to amplify the long-term benefits of not quitting. You need to remind yourself of life at the other end of the dip, because it's easier to overcome the pain of yet another unsuccessful cold call, which is a sales term of you know, mind-numbingly reaching out to people, if the reality of a successful sales career is more concrete. Even more vivid, so he said, it's easier to stick out a lousy class in college if you can picture graduation day. Even more vivid is the power of keeping score. If you can track your Alexa rank online, which is a ranking of websites to show how successful they are, or your class rank, or your market share, or your spot in the sales team pecking order, working your way up to number one is daily feedback that helps you deal with the short-term hassles. And I love that. I love that thought that it is true, right? I think that for me, I do. It's easier to endure pain if I have certainty around what I'm going after, if I have absolute clarity of the purpose of that pain and suffering to push through. And, you know, he says, persistent people are able to visualize the idea of light at the end of the tunnel when others can't see it. At the same time, the smartest people are realistic about not imagining light when there isn't any. And I love that balance. It's not about doggedly going after something that doesn't make sense. It's about being honest. And we've talked about this in so many interviews of the importance of honesty with oneself. And looking at something and saying, look, you know, this is I get what it would take to get there. It's not worth it to me. And quitting in that case is great. Let me find one other thing. You know, just one quick thing he says on job seeking, because I think that implies to many of you who are listening to this. Job seekers face the dip because human resources departments support it. Human resources doesn't show up at your door and offer you a job. They set hurdles like submitting a resume or wearing a suit or flying to Cleveland as a way of screening out folks who aren't actually serious about the job. And I love that thought of recognizing just in our system the amount of speed bumps that are there to try and weed out those who aren't really serious about something. Just two more things. One thing is the next time you catch yourself being average when you feel like quitting, realize that you only have two good choices, quit or be exceptional. Average is for losers. I think that's just great. I think that's like so true. It's, you know, it's not about playing it safe. It's about really going after what matters for us. And to do that, you have to say no to a lot of things. You have to rule out the things that don't really matter to you. If you've taken my advice and listened to Gary Vaynerchuk, Gary V, in his podcast, you'll hear him say over and over again, it's like, look, I talk to people who say they want to just crush it in their career. They want to start the next Facebook. And then I see that they're on five different softball teams. And I know they're deluding themselves. You can't be on five softball teams and do what it takes to build a Facebook. And maybe building Facebook is not your aspiration. It's not about what's right or what's wrong. It's just trying to say what's realistic and to say that you might have to trim out a lot of fat to go after something worthwhile. There was one other thing I wanted to share. Okay, so last thing I'll say. He says, simple. If you can't make it through the dip, don't start. If you can embrace that simple rule, you'll be a lot choosier about which journeys you start. The reason why I think that's so powerful is that whether you're you know, a civilian now and well into your career, or whether you're on active duty planning about it, I think that the you know, there's that aiming component of really being clear about what you want And that might be, I want a job where I work 40 hours a week, I make a good income, and I have plenty of time with my kids and my family. You may want a job where you can work remotely and not have to go into the office every day. You may want a certain income level that will take 100 hours a week for years to get. Whatever it is, and you can do all of those, you can do any of those, whatever it is, I think it's great to take this advice of being clear about what you want and recognizing the dip it'll take to get through to get that. And if you really want it, then commit. Commit and know that that dip is endemic. Know that that's inevitable. And have that be your muse guiding you on as you go for it. And if not, save yourself the time. Quit before you get there. He said the worst thing you can do is quit in the middle of the dip. Really count that cost before you go into it. One very last thing. So he said, if you want to be a superstar, then you need to find a field with a steep dip, a barrier between those who try and those who succeed. And if you've got to get through that dip, and you've got to get through that dip to the other side. I hope this is helpful. I really like this book, The Dip. Like I said, about an 80-minute read. If these sorts of episodes are helpful, I love to read, and I love to be able to share what I'm learning. If it's a field pertinent to the Beyond the Uniform community, let me know in the comments section. Email me at justin@beyonduniform.io. And nothing says thank you more than a positive review on iTunes, so I'd love that as well. Thank you so much. Have a fantastic week. Well, I will be back next episode with more interviews with veterans about their civilian career. Take care.